Hey everyone, welcome to the Optimism Show. Today, as a guest, we have Samuel Huber, who is the founder of DTech.Vision. He specializes in building both new products as well as scaling existing products on Farcaster and Ethereum. And you can find Samuel's contact details as well as his website in the description of this podcast episode. With Samuel today, we're going to cover three main things. Is Farcaster really the future of social media? Can simplifying your blockchain app speed up your success? And what are the main mistakes that blockchain founders make that don't allow them to get new users? And what are the ways to navigate these issues? And if you're more of a text person, you can also go to optimism.show/insights. And there you will find a 2-minute text summary of this episode, as well as some action steps that you can implement in your business today. Let's get started.
Your company really specializes in Farcaster and Ethereum. I'd love to hear, like, where do you see the Farcaster ecosystem specifically headed in the coming years? And also, like, it's a two-sided question. Like, the other thing is, like, what do you think that a lot of builders and people don't see about the vision of Farcaster?
Well, both of them actually go well together. What people do not see is also where it's headed. Because a lot of people see that, oh, this is a toy for 10,000 people that just enjoy talking about crypto technology, which this is exactly where it started. And that's why there's a lot of developers. So if you have a community that talks about technology and the bleeding edge, then likely you have a community of a lot of developers. And they fostered that. And there's generally this vibe in Farcaster where if you ship something, meaning you deliver something, whether it is a small tool, some documentation or whatever, then you're considered a good guy, which for some people is a little weird because usually on social media, the guy yapping the loudest is the good guy, which in Farcaster, the roles are somewhat reversed. Obviously, there's guys with huge ideas and whatever that talk a lot that also get the respect for that because, well, clear communication is a skill. But where the ecosystem in Farcaster itself is headed is if similar to where Facebook 2012 was, where Reddit was initially, and where Twitter was, especially also Twitter 2015-16, where a lot of Twitter apps actually spun up. And Facebook, Reddit, and Twitter all have in common that they had flourishing app ecosystems. And with app ecosystems, I mean third-party applications where nowadays, 2024, we're thinking about app as, oh, this is a standalone application that you download on your phone through Google Play Store or Apple App Store. Back then, it used to be that you're in Facebook and you click this game and now you're playing chess against your friend and it says your Facebook name, it says their Facebook name, and you just play against each other and afterwards you share it on social media. Exactly. That same exact concept exists on Farcaster as well. I'm calling it mini app. Depending on what time frame we are in, it may have a different term, but mini app is where it's headed. So that is the only term that matters, I think. And Farcaster also has this thing called frames, where it's this small little enriched link where you can put an input field and a couple buttons on top of your link. So usually on Twitter or Reddit or wherever you share a webpage, that webpage is just rendered as this is DTech.Vision and it says Farcaster Development Agency. Well, this is boring. On Farcaster, if I add a little bit of spice to my link just by programming it on the webpage, then it actually shows a large image very nicely with 2, 3, 4 buttons and an input field. So I could, even as a Farcaster agency, I could just go and every time somebody shares my webpage, I could have input your email to get started on Farcaster. So like, or if you're a newsletter, whatever, you can do that. And then the person doesn't have to leave their feed. They can just input their email, click enter, and I would get a lead. Or as a email newsletter, you would get the people in and then you send the mail to confirm the subscription. If you're in Europe, you have to do that. So this is the overall thing where we are at in terms of where the ecosystem is going, what is enabling that, and what people from the outside kind of gloss at or don't see is that you can run a whole copy of the Farcaster network yourself anytime you want, because all of the social media posts They're available on what we call hubs in the Farcaster ecosystem, but what in the blockchain ecosystem is called nodes. So you can actually take this copy and check and program against it and do whatever you want, just like a blockchain. The difference there being that this server ecosystem called hubs is just that. It's a server ecosystem. There is no blockchain. It is just a piece of software that synchronizes eventually to have those posts. And eventually is important because it means that maybe you do not have my post on your server for the next however a couple of seconds or whatever, but you will have it eventually is the guarantee. Whereas with a blockchain, what happens is if that transaction is actually there, then you have it as well. Because blockchains rely on that for financial data, because it would be stupid if I can send you $10, but you do not receive it and you think that I didn't send it to you. And then we have to reconcile that. And then we could have double spending where you think I didn't send it to you. I need to send it again. And then I spent it twice. Or even the worst case where I'm telling you that I sent it to you. I also sent it to your friend as well, but I only have $10. So now I sent $10 twice. And because all of you see divergent states, you think that I actually sent it. Like on a blockchain, that doesn't happen. On Farcaster, it's a little bit different in that. But the general goal there is, with Reddit, Facebook, and Twitter, they changed their APIs that these games, Farmville and others on Facebook, on Reddit, it's any kind of application that subreddits use to have fun with their community. On Twitter, it's something like news pages, it is scheduling platforms, it's social media management, it's some games that use your Twitter posts to show your stuff or your Twitter character, your Twitter avatar based on your profile, all of that. That doesn't work anymore because the developer now has costs that are too high to maintain as a side project that somebody just does on the weekend, and they don't want to pay a couple thousand dollars every month for that because they're not earning it. It's just a fun project. And that is uniquely enabled by you being able to run your own Farcaster copy on your server or just paying a $10 API fee to one of the API provider companies, but you could run it yourself. And that access also means that the price of accessing that will go down, because the more API companies as the network grows join, the lower that price usually gets for the entry level. That's where I think the ecosystem headed and what some people are missing. And that is a developer focused standpoint. If you're a user, then dude, if you're a user on Farcaster, you have so much fun. Because you actually don't need to leave your freaking app to use fun experiences like these little links that are enriched with buttons where you can do stuff like, oh, I'm clicking a button and based on all the posts I've done in the past, I'm now getting generated an anime waifu. Surprisingly, actually is described with a text that fits my character way too well. And I'm thinking like, dude, I am not an anime fan, but I would watch this anime character because it sounds exactly like me. And it is because it uses all my posts. And this is fun as a user. Another thing as a user that is fun with mini apps is I'm still in my social media app, right? Like I'm still in my Reddit, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever. I open this app and I can play Snake, for example, or I can schedule calendar events and I just post them to my friends or post my score to my friends. And I haven't left the app. And those mini app experiences are fun for the user as well.
It really has the potential to becoming one of the super apps, like what has been talking about for years, like where, as you just said, you don't have to leave the app and everything, and you have everything within Farcaster. And like with DTech, like you're really focusing on developing these apps and yes. Also for other projects. I'd love to hear more about your process in general, because you really brought it to mastery from bringing it just from an idea to getting it to an actual working product and fully executing the project. So usually when you approach a project like that, let's say an entrepreneur approaches you and they would like to enter this ecosystem and similar, how does your process look like to go from idea to execution and eventually going live?
Usually when somebody approaches me, either, as you said, they have an idea, or they already have an existing product and want to join the ecosystem. That's the two cases where if you already have an existing product, then we will have conversations to make sure that how you can enter the ecosystem is something that you understand. Like you understand all of the options and fun things you can do enabled by mini apps and other fun little composable, programmable funsies that Farcaster enables, whereas if you already have an idea but you don't have a product yet, then it's a little different because, yes, we have a blank slate, and this clean slate means we can just do whatever we want, but we need to make sure that this whatever we want makes sense and also is the fastest we can do it. Because if it's the fastest we can do it in, then you will get information back from users. Otherwise, you just spend a lot of money, which if you want to compensate me for my time, I'm happy to work on longer projects. But it usually makes sense to go as fast as possible to get something out and get feedback, and then everything changes. So if you haven't just have an idea, that we iterate on that idea and make sure that we have something that we can just ship as fast as possible and get data back. If you already have a product, then likely you want to tab into a social network to remove friction for your users or do a marketing campaign, either one of the two. So there, if you want to just tap into the ecosystem as a marketing campaign, then we have to design something that is easily shareable, but also funnels back to your product and makes sense. So that is one thing, and that usually then also goes well with removing friction for users. So a project we did is with Courtyard, which what they do is they have collectible cards, like Pokemon cards and all of that, and you can just buy them on the webpage, and they have it in large warehouses, make sure that it's safe, and you don't need to worry about physical card management. You could just have the card, display the card, whatever, digitally. And they've wanted to have that in Farcaster because, well, there's people who already have crypto, are able to pay in crypto, understand the benefits of an NFT, and can just buy a Pokemon card. So what we did there is we took their vending machine. Their vending machine is a piece of software where you can just go to the webpage and say, I want a random Pokemon card. And you're kind of gambling on it. And we took that to Farcaster, where now you're in this social app where your friend said, I got card whatever. Do you want to try it as well? And then there's this little image and a button below, and you click that button, and now you get your own card. And you actually pay for that as well in that whole transaction flow. Like, you're not leaving Farcaster while you're still paying for this. This is the benefit of having crypto rails in that Farcaster ecosystem being embedded as well, which as a user you may not care about, but as a business you do if your user has that, because then payments become way easier and eventually you want to get paid as a business. At least I heard from other people that they like to make money as a business. Some startup founders in crypto do not think that that is their goal. I would disagree. But this is usually what happens, right? So as you said, there's a startup coming, they have an idea, they want to go viral. We can build some cool stuff that just has that built in. Or there's somebody with an idea that wants to build a prototype. They actually do always say they want to build an application, but they actually just want to have a prototype, because if I quote them for the full application, they always say to me that I'm crazy, because they do not expect a couple $100,000. But here, if you want to build a mobile app and you want to have it all integrated and you want me to actually build a backend that could scale to a couple tens of thousands of users as Farcaster has today, it ain't cheap. It takes time and it takes experience. If you just want to have a proof of concept out there where you can quickly test your thesis, then first of all, I do not have to be that rigorous in engineering. Second, the scope is just 1% of your full application, and it's just that 1% that you're able to test your thesis on. And there the process is just a lot of conversations to get to that 1%.
Okay, and a lot of, like, I completely agree with you on that. Like, a lot of startup, especially SaaS entrepreneurs, overcomplicate when it comes to developing their apps. And that's exactly, you really allow them to simplify that in the first place and just to test their thesis and be like, okay, this works or this doesn't work. Like, let's go to the next thing. Like, there's no point in like really hammering on this idea at this point, maybe.
What I'm doing is I'm hammering on them to remove stuff from their idea, because usually they don't want to let go of pieces of the idea, right? So usually, I'm kind of the bad guy that tells them, oh, this is stupid.
Especially when we create it in the mind and we have this beautiful idea with all the bells and whistles and everything in it. It's quite hard to remove some stuff, though. I want that.
Actually, it's not hard to remove stuff if you think from the user standpoint. Because if you think from the user standpoint, the user just wants to get something done. And whatever that is, remove friction in that process, and you may or may not, depending on how valuable that thing they want to get done is, have a business. If you think about Stripe, well, Stripe is, first of all, the SaaS, which if you like that, we're talking B2B SaaS in that case, or B2C, then Stripe is cool. Stripe Just as simple as it sounds, Stripe allows people to pay online. Well, I can pay online anyways. I can just take in the credit card data. I can just send it to MasterCard. You actually can't. You have to handle all the credit card data and all of that. So you're having a high value flow because it's payments. And you have a high value flow because regulatory oversight and actual security on the programming side. Well, so Stripe solves a really high value problem that you may not think of a high value problem because it's just getting paid. As what, especially in crypto, is happening in 2024 is a lot of people talk end user and consumer, and crypto talks about scaling to a couple billion people. A couple billion people do not need to get paid via Stripe. A couple billion people usually want to be entertained in some way, or if they want to purchase something, make that purchase even easier. So that is usually where the end user is at. And then how do you solve for that? Okay, if they want to be entertained, just make it as dumb and easy as possible, have fun little graphics, and just make it feel fun. So that is how you do that. And if you just want to make something easier, making something easier means, well, first of all, your wording has to be so stupidly simple that somebody that has never looked at it before can at least know what buttons to press. They may not know what it's doing, but they know what buttons to press. This is number one. Second, the little less you can do, the better. Like if I just want to buy this Pokemon card from a vending machine, I just want to hit buy and get the Pokemon card back that I just pulled. That's all I want. If you tell me that now I have to install this wallet application, sign up to an exchange because I have money on a bank account or a credit card, then I deposit and it takes me 5 days because of know your customer and approving with my passport and all of that. I'm not going to just get that Pokemon card. Sorry, I'm not. If I'm in a social app where I just click get Pokemon card and it tells me, yeah, you have to pay, but I have ways to just instantly do that, and then I go through, then it's now 3 steps instead of all of the, we didn't even go beyond the exchange, right? But you get the point. And so this is where the removing comes in. This is also where Farcaster comes in, because with crypto rails being built in, it helps you in that sense.
That's actually on point. And also what you just said with the really removing that friction and making it as simple as possible and as straightforward as possible, the user experience. Where do you think a lot of, especially companies that label themselves as blockchain or crypto first, make a mistake that doesn't really allow them to acquire more users? Like, what do you think they're really complicating in their lives in the first place that really stops them from acquiring more users?
Well, your question hit it perfectly. They label themselves as blockchain and Web3. If the end goal is to make it as stupidly simple as possible for the end user, then no label matters. The actual label should be, this is the easiest way to do XYZ. This is the most fun, whatever, right? Instagram has won because it is the most fun way to consume pictures. TikTok is large because it is the most fun way to consume video, short form video. YouTube has won because it's the easiest way to learn something if you like videos to learn. Google has won because it's the easiest way of finding what you're looking for. And there's other platforms that then go a step further. Okay, so now you want to look for something in a specific category. Well, you still Google. Like Airbnb, most searches for housing do not start on Airbnb. Like Airbnb would want you to believe that, but usually what I do is I Google hotel or whatever in that location, and then I get a feel for the pricing, and then I may check Airbnb as an additional option. Amazon actually has done a great job at becoming the first point where you start for searching for products, where half of the searches, I think is a number that I saw a couple of years ago, start on Amazon. The other half starts where? Well, on Google. The biggest search engine is Google. The second biggest search engine is YouTube. And then potentially, maybe, I don't know what the other biggest search engines are, but Amazon is actually a big one for products. So if you want to acquire users, that is your framework. You actually want to talk to the user. If you label yourself as an AI company, a blockchain company, whatever, then if your user is not this one specific target customer that is in that industry, in AI, blockchain, or whatever, and really needs that one specific thing, which likely if you're not developer tooling, then it's not the case, then your marketing terms, who you're speaking to, is wrong. Because the company wording should not speak to the investor. Labeling yourself as blockchain, Web3, or AI may help you raise money. But raising money doesn't make you succeed, which is another big problem we have in this space. And I think we have, because Silicon Valley has become, I wouldn't say fun, but Silicon Valley has become the thing that people look up to, as Wall Street was before Silicon Valley came. And there's been multiple iterations over.
And a lot of entrepreneurs, especially startup entrepreneurs, get real stuck in that loop of like, raise the next series. And there's just so many companies that after some time, they just go bankrupt.
Also, if you raise the next series and your company actually works, you make less money. If you can go without raising the next series, you make more money. Some people don't understand that because they're playing a status game.
What do you, like, on that point, like, what do you think are really, like, some really efficient ways to start monetizing the company and, like, to start monetizing the service or to acquire more users without really having to go to VCs or, like, to private equity and raise funds?
You want me to get really real?
Of course.
Solve a problem that users want to pay for. Sounds stupid, but if you solve a problem that users want to pay for, your customer, if then that customer wants to pay for it, likely you could use that money, first of all, to help them and solve that problem. And second, you now have a budget to get another customer. And most likely, because you solved a problem that they are willing to pay for, if you tell them, what other people do you know that have that problem, they will happily tell you because you just helped them solve a valuable problem. Like when I solve the problem of getting from idea to a good execution for startups, I don't tell them I'm coding your perfect app. And like other people go and make their code more efficient. What I do is I take their idea and I give them a good execution. That's all they want. They want this good execution. And from idea to good execution. How I do that, they don't care. But they're paying for it. And then if other people they know have that problem, they're like, hey, Sam can help you get that. If your startup is either in entertainment or in removing friction, like making something easier, then if you're not entertaining enough, I'm not paying. How many people pay Spotify, pay Netflix, or pay like Patreon, some small creator, like in a subscription fee, because they're just that entertaining to them and it's valuable to them? How many people actually pay credit card fees? You don't notice it. But if you're driving around in the United States and you go to a gas station and you want to fill up your car, they have two prices. They have a cash price and they have a card price. In Germany, that is illegal. But in the US, they have two different prices because one is with a surcharge for the credit card fees and the other one is just cash. And that means that if I'm paying as a consumer, I'm paying card and I know that I'm paying more, but it's just more convenient to me. So that credit card company makes money because they solved my issue of not having enough cash on hand and I just swipe my card. And that is a $1 billion problem that they have solved. Just in fees. Yeah. Then they're taking credit cards and they solve the problem that I think I have a limited amount of money, by giving me a credit card that tells me I have infinite amounts of money and then me paying interest on them. But that's another problem. But it's a long way of saying, solve a problem that is worth something to the user.
And I love how simply you put that, like solve a problem that's actually worth something to the user. And really looking at the general blockchain ecosystem right now, there's so many companies, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but there's so many companies that, to be honest, I've been in the space for years, and I even when I look at them, I still don't know what they do.
You want to know what they do? They're marketing companies. They raise money from investors to drop a token and make those investors more money. That is what those blockchain companies do, because the end consumer doesn't understand that just something being labeled blockchain makes it not inherently valuable. The thing that makes it valuable is solving a real problem. You know why USDC, Circle, the company that just goes on the blockchain and says, hey, we have a token, and that token is worth $1. That's the most stupid token idea I've heard. It's not going to make me rich to get just $1. I want more US dollars. Well, actually, there is a need, back to solving an actual problem, for people, first in compliance, because every time I transfer ETH around, I have a taxable transaction. So I actually want something that is worth exactly $1 or euro or whatever. So I'm using that coin, that stupid coin that isn't going to change in value now. So we call that stable coins. So they have actually identified a problem. Okay, how do they make money? Because their token value doesn't go up, right? It's not speculative. Well, they don't even take a processing fee on it. There's no fee. It's like the credit card we talked about, they make billions in fees. How does this one coin, stupid coin that doesn't change in value, do it? Well, that coin gets other coins, right? It's like you sell Ethereum to buy that coin. So through that value, they're able to then say, okay, this coin that we issue to you, we actually back that with securities. Securities meaning in the traditional sense, bonds, real estate, whatever. Those actually earn interest. So right now, the United States gives you around 4.5%. And if you do some other investment tricks, you may get 6% just from holding US dollar. And then the only risk you have is the United States defaulting on their loans, which in the next 5 years may not happen. So that company that did the most stupid coin actually makes the most money in the whole ecosystem. And then the other ones are the ones that actually take trading fees because you just want to gamble on that not so actually sensible coin. And they are like, hey, that is one problem that users have identified. They want us to make it as easy as possible for them to gamble. And those companies are called centralized exchanges and they make money. That's the only two players making money. The other players making money, they're either in infrastructure. And if they're in infrastructure, there's only a couple of them that actually do make money, because it's quite hard to index blockchain data. And if they're not in infrastructure, then they're consultants or development companies like me who some founders go to and they're like, hey, we have this fun idea, help us execute it, and it may work or it may not, right? If it's not the next successful startup, then they don't make money.
Well, that's looking at the whole ecosystem like that, it even everywhere it's like that. There's just so much fluff floating around. Oh, yeah. And so much like fancy words and this and that.
It's not limited to blockchain, even though people that have only worked in crypto think that it is.
Even in general, if you look at the whole business world, but
yeah.
In blockchain is especially evident, maybe because like the space is actually not that large.
Well, yes, and also it's directly
massive. It's not.
Also, we have public valuations attached to everything called tokens, right?
Yes.
You were in the marketing space before, and you said you kind of got out of the marketing space because it got too ridiculous and too overblown. Well, in blockchain, because any kind of thing you do, if you have a token out, may influence your token price, and we are degenerates, so it likely does. It by nature is overblown. Whereas in marketing, it's just overblown to get another project from somebody and you may not deliver on it and then you're gone, but you've made enough money in those 4 or 5 years that you actually were there. And it's potentially the same in AI, where I'm the next biggest AI company. Actually, what I do is I just call the API of the actual API company, but I make it easier for you. So whatever, until that AI company makes it easy for you, I'm the guy. It's like, works until it doesn't. But until then, you make a lot of money unless you raised money, and then just good luck.
I'm really curious, like to hear your answer on the following question. Like, especially now that in general the blockchain space, personally, I feel it's changing. Like a lot of people and investors are getting more conscious about what is going on. Until when do you think that? First of all, do you think like this kind of overblown ideas and like not necessarily valuable stuff would continue for a long time?
Yes, for the simple reason that by directly monetizing and by having monetization built in, the easiest way to make money is to convince a bunch of people that what you are going to say that you're going to do is going to be valuable, and then you can directly monetize that. It's really hard to do that outside of blockchain, because if I'm on Instagram screaming out that I'm the most beautiful girl and I'm going to post a nude, then unless I actually do post the nude, yes, I may get followers, but I can't monetize those followers. If I'm a girl in the blockchain space, and yes, I'm using this girl example because it's really simple. Please, as if you're listening to this, make sure that you may not want this to be your daughter, depending on who you are. I'm not judging. This girl can just say, if my coin that I've just launched is doing $5 million in like total valuation, then I'm posting a nude. And there's going to be a bunch of people that just want to see that freaking nude and spend money on it. And then she can just sell those tokens to those people over time. And she may be actually making those $5 million. And then she can decide if she wants to post that nude or not. Like, it may even be an anonymous account with another fun idea saying like, oh, I want to kill Ethereum. Ethereum is a couple billion dollars. What do I want to do? I want to kill this thing. So if I get to that, it's going to be the next $1 trillion thing because I'll be even bigger. And then my little small coin is going to be worth $100 million. Dude, like, no, this is not stopping. Because as blockchain gets bigger, arguing that you're going to kill it or be the next one is going to be more valuable. And there's going to be a lot of people that do not understand the difference between you actually saying you're going to kill something and actually doing it. So they're still speculating on that. And also, I don't see the world going to a place where the gap between the uber wealthy and the general most people is becoming smaller. And if that is not becoming smaller, then all of those people that are not uber wealthy, they will want to become uber wealthy. And if they think the fastest way to do that is to believe you that you're going to kill the next thing in blockchain and they can just directly invest into that, well, then they're going to do it and then you make money. It's like there's a bunch of forces at play here. Like if we want to go into communism and everything is worth the exact same, which actually in communism also hasn't happened, funnily enough. I'm German, so we had a communist experiment run by the Russians in Germany for around 40, 50 years. But say that we have perfect egalitarianism and everything is worth the exact same, then, well, okay, then I don't need to speculate on the value because I know the exact value. But if we do not live in that system, then there's going to be something that I speculate on the value or can speculate on the value of because the values are different. And if it's directly tied to a financial transaction, like it is with the blockchain, then it's in the nature of that beast to be that way. So I do not think that is ever going to stop in blockchain. What I do think is we're going to have more actual useful things where blockchain may come out of the stigma of just being that speculation because there is actual use cases. Like I'm paying freelancers all over the world in this stupid little only worth one currency token that doesn't change in value because first of all, it's the easiest for me accounting wise. Second, I can just send it around and bank transfers internationally cost me around 10% in transaction fees. Whereas this blockchain thing is a couple of cents and that's fixed. No. Percentage based fee.
No, thank you for the philosophical approach you took there. And like, I find it really interesting. And my final question is really going back to where we started and going back to DTech. So where do you see like yourself in the near future and in the coming years, like going with DTech and in general, like where do you see yourself progressing and focusing most of your attention on?
Oh, I'm going to build cool shit with cool people, and that's all I'm going to do, and that's all I will ever do. So if that means that I'm building cool shit in blockchain, that I'm going to do. If that means I'm building cool shit as social applications on Farcaster, that is what it's going to do. And if blockchain and Farcaster are not cool shit, because we actually realize that blockchain is just inherently worthless and our institutions are actually to be fully trusted, notice the irony here, then I'm going to leave and I'm going to build cool shit somewhere else. Noticing the irony, you're already seeing where this is going, where blockchain and in social experiments and Farcaster, there's a lot more cool shit to be built. So if you're cool people, please come and build cool shit with us. No, that is exactly what I want to do. Currently, DTech itself is limited in the sense that Farcaster and blockchain are not that big to really build cool shit because I just outlined what bullshit I don't want. It's cool shit, not bullshit. And you have to make sure that you don't do bullshit because there's a lot of it. And family-friendly rating of this podcast just went down. If you're not beeping that, that's cool. That is where I see myself and that's what I want to do. And I'm building a team around that to make sure that more people can experience that, mostly on the technical side, because I've noticed that if I want to have other people condense down ideas and trim out that bullshit, they really need to understand what bullshit or not bullshit is. And I found that to scale way harder than the technical skills.
It's an amazing way to wrap up. Samuel, it was a pleasure having you today. Thank you for coming to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Thank you for tuning in with us on this episode of The Optimism Show. To get the 2-minute summary, as well as the action steps you can implement in your business today, directly derived from the insights gained from this episode, go to optimism.show/insights. There you will find all the notes, all the cliff notes from this episode, as well as all the other episodes that we have published so far. And until next time, stay optimistic.